Welcome to Season 2 of A Punch Above. I'm your host, Chris Foster, the Global CEO of The Next Practice and the former Global COO of Saatchi & Saatchi Worldwide. Throughout my career, companies and brands have always come to me with one key question. How can we punch above our weight to drive more than our fair share of growth in the market? In this podcast, I want to share some of the lessons I've learned along the way and invite business leaders and thinkers to discuss how they create breakthrough impact and growth in today's global economy. Hi, welcome to A Punch Above. In the last episode, I spoke to Roberto Guidetti, Group CEO of Vitasoy, about the five key drivers for innovation. As we move through the pandemic, we're seeing more and more innovation developing around solving the world's biggest problems. Some of my favorite advancements are clean energy, electric vehicles, and the strong move to plant-based nutrition. In this episode, I'll talk with Roberto about the most urgent topic for this generation, sustainability. Let's dive in. We were sitting in a great Italian restaurant in the Landmark in Hong Kong when the maitre d' approached our table. Roberto greeted him like an old friend. Che piacere vedervi. After he introduced me, the conversation quickly switched to English for obvious reasons, and we began discussing in detail the restaurant's mostly local sourcing approach that allowed them to deliver the freshest and finest ingredients for their customers while working with and supporting local producers to ensure that the restaurant can go on delivering with excellence well into the future. I'm convinced that Roberto took me there for one, the great Italian food, but also so we could discuss this tangible example of a business putting sustainability at the heart of its model, not only because it's the right thing to do, but because it will help them to deliver a superior outcome for their customers for the long term. Taste, experience, and ambiance are table stakes for high-end dining experiences. But for the business to continue to thrive for years to come, it needs to lead with sustainable thinking and practice to ensure that it will survive the here-today, gone-tomorrow reality of the retail food and beverage sector. So, Roberto, fantastic conversations on culture and innovation. Now I want to talk about, I know, something that's near and dear to your heart, which is sustainability. Now, sustainability can be an incredibly broad topic, or sometimes in the business world, kind of myopically interpreted. You know, now there are lots of companies who have ESG requirements, and that's my sustainability program, or they think about it as corporate social responsibility. And I think you and I both embrace the fact that, you know, sustainability is something that needs to sit at the heart of the company and the business strategy to help your business thrive in perpetuity. Right? That's kind of the essence of sustainability. And especially in a world now where, I mean, I would argue, you know, governments are failing us. I think business now needs to really lead the charge and help us make the world a better place. And in January 2020, you entered the top 100 of the Corporate Knights, which is an index of the global 100 most sustainable corporations in the world. And you guys were the only and the first based in Hong Kong and operating in Asia. I mean, that's quite, you know, talking about punching above, that's quite an impressive accomplishment. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you think about sustainability and how you put it at the heart of the business?
The company's original thought was a sustainable thought. So that obviously for a company like us, helps, because you don't have to use sustainability to offset the wrong portfolio or a portfolio that is not climate friendly. That's not our case, right? What the company produces, what the company does, is basically in that perimeter already. And what we found over the last decade is that the evolution and the arrival of environmental, social, and governance as a framework, it seems to be offering a comprehensive way to include all the various elements, all right? So the fact that, you know, it actually includes in our mind making the right product. So we believe that it's important for a company producing something that is of help. In our case, is health and sustainability, right? But having an offering that does that, and the criteria that we have for that is basically maximizing the plant-based nature of our portfolio, maximizing nutrition and minimizing negative. And so when you're talking about environment, we have energy targets, right? And so water, electricity, fuel, over the last 5 years, reducing by more than 20%, and the intention to continue to do this per unit of product produced. And then we have a number of other areas that expand from what was a more narrow traditional understanding of sustainability, like, you know, supply chain management. Okay, so when you manage then these suppliers, are you having the same criteria that you use for your own company to manage your suppliers? And when you're looking at your customers downstream, because we also supply customers like Starbucks or McDonald's with some of our formulations and some of our SKUs, they will also have similar criteria. So I think that this is a very comprehensive and inclusive way to think about sustainability. Now, it started and accelerated in 2015 when the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, like many stock exchanges in the world, we are listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, started mandating some basic requirements. And as the stock exchange mandated some basic requirement, the choice for us of whether to consider this compliance work or purpose work. And our choice was, it belongs to our purpose. We're going to do it seriously, not because it's mandated by the stock exchange. And that thought led to the second thought, which was, we're going to benchmark not the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, but we're going to benchmark more advanced practices of stock exchange. We started this journey a decade earlier in order to stay ahead of the curve and be able to then achieve another milestone, which in our mind was, once we achieve the sort of scale of around $1 billion where we are now, you will have entities like Dow Jones, like MSCI, Sustainalytics, who are going to be ready to rate us. And you will then be able to have an objective assessment of your sustainability credentials and your ESG credentials that goes beyond a marketing effort of amplification that you might have. Increasingly, our view is that shoppers, people are becoming ever more interested in a non-superficial understanding about whether the company is operating in a sustainable manner or not. And they will look not just at what the company is saying, but they will look about what external entities and rating agencies are going to say about the company. So this has been very helpful for us, because now we're doing it every year. The scores are going up and they provide an objective assessment about our efforts.
I love the shift or the move from, okay, we had a choice to make, right? Was this going to be compliance reporting, or is this going to be something that is purposeful and meaning, you know? And we talked about culture. And one of the things, you know, when you have meaning baked into what you're doing and purpose, and people can show up every day to work knowing that they're helping the world and not harming the world, I think that that's incredibly meaningful. The other thing I think is how, besides the reporting criteria that you have to do, how do you benchmark yourself in this arena? Because, you know, you could stay in your category, you could look at other Asian companies, you know, what? How do you think about that?
Well, look, the ESG ratings are helpful to us because what they do is that they take a set of companies which are globally at a certain level of scale and globally, all right? And so you would have, for example, in the case of Dow Jones, you might have 200 plus companies globally, and they provide a score and they provide details about performance. So you're going to be able to know where you are in the continuum of these companies. And our goal is to get to the top tertile. I will be in the top 40%. We think we can get into the top 20% going forward by continuing on our journey. So that is one way to look at it. But as you know, Chris, there are also exciting companies who are at startup stage or who are at a smaller scale that are doing incredibly important and interesting work. And so we are also looking at what these companies are doing. And one of the beautiful things about technology and the time we're living now is that is quite easy to access and to approach. And if you take some of the role model companies of this plant-based movement, they're very public about what they're doing and why they're doing it, because it's driven by purpose. And some of the innovations that they have on sustainability practices, on ESG practices, we pay attention to, because we find that sometimes it might be in a different category, but it teaches us of what is going to be the next stage.
As a lot of Asia continues to emerge into the middle class, et cetera, you have a lot of life considerations, right? It's almost a luxury, right? Sometimes to be thinking about, how could I make a more sustainable choice, et cetera. How do you normalize or bring it into the practice so that, right, sustainability and sustainable practice can be for everyone?
For us, it starts with the product, because we believe that ultimately a product should also be assessed by what it produces and sells, right? And so that is the first touch point where increasingly the shopper understands that in addition to have a product, in food and beverages, taste is king. So the product needs to taste, right? But from a message that was focused on health, we are now progressively adding a message about the value, the sustainability value that a plant-based choosing a plant-based offering makes. Okay. And this is a message that is done is delivered with a different intensity and a different pacing, depending on the market, to your point about where you're operating. So for example, if we take our Australian business, Australia has been already moving to a sort of full-blown sustainability message, even in the advertising campaign of the brand. This is resonating very, very highly with the shopper in Australia. In mainland China, we're going that direction, but we will not be as overt. The message is starting to come in, and because we also need to pace it to the context and to the understanding. But what we see and what is also very encouraging to us is that when you're looking at the age segmentation of interest towards health and sustainability and plant-based, it looks like the social media a couple of decades ago, where it was like 15 to 20 year old is like 90%, and then you go back to 40, 50, et cetera, and it's decreasing. So obviously, the young people and the Gen Zs, even more than the millennials, show an incredible propensity and interest and really meaningful. They are the ones who are going to make the market going forward. And that is good news, because we think that a non-superficial interest and a bit of a challenge to really test whether these companies are really doing what they say they're doing and looking for objective measurement is healthy. And so that is going to be forcing everyone to sort of be real about their activities.
And I think that's such a great point, which is, with the youth and the adoption of, the world they need to inherit. So the choices are very, very real for us all, but particularly real and prevalent, I think, for millennial on down. One of the more memorable dinners that you and I think, had was in Saigon. And we were talking after a few bottles of wine, and we were talking about books that we were reading. And I asked you, I said, "So what are you reading?" And you said, "How Not to Die." And I said, "How Not to Die? Is that?" "Yes, Chris. Yes." And I said, "Okay, well, what's the secret?" And basically you said, pretty much plant-based. plant-based, healthy diet, workout. That's kind of the gist. So I was like, okay, thank you. I took the advice. I didn't read the book, but I try to be as plant-based as possible. That's obviously the trend, right? You, as you say, are right in the midst of it and leading. How are you thinking about kind of what's next and what's coming for plant-based world and products and how we think about kind of diet and nutrition?
My assessment is that we have not seen anything yet, how big this is going to become. And there is such a level of activity at startup stage globally. The conversation on plant-based has tended in the past to be a bit Western-centric. But what is very, very encouraging now is the level of increased startups and enterprises that are in this space, not just reapplying concepts or reapplying products, but actually inventing the Asian equivalent of it. And some of these companies, actually, there are a couple of them who have already started to export their products into the UK and into the US. And to the credit of these customers in the UK and to the US, they're actually giving a chance to these companies to put their offering on the shelf. That is very exciting. I think that the fact that over the last few years, we have gone from something that was acceptable in taste to something instead that is quite good and really coming close to the product category that these some of these products are mirroring, and also in addition to some new products, right, is making a big difference. Because when you don't have a big trade-off, then the argument for the health and sustainability making the right choice starts being even more powerful. And so there are some of these methods which are being used are more traditional, but some of these methods are really technologically advanced. And so this trade-off on taste will reduce more and more, and people will adopt ever more.
That's amazing. You know, and that's sort of one of the places you started, which was, you know, taste is king. If you don't have taste, right? And if nobody drinks you, who cares if you're sustainable, right? So the more you can reduce that barrier. In terms of innovation, have you ever thought about partnering with these startup companies, using that sort of outsourced innovation, kind of adopting some of their practices and methodologies?
Yes, we do a bit of that. And it's a very relevant, pertinent question, because some of the, when we were talking earlier on about the expansion and innovation and some of this creativity, a number of these companies were able to do these unique, new to the world kind of ideas, use, connect, and develop. And they will work with a flavor house. They will work with someone who is going to be providing the packaging creativity, someone who's going to be providing the co-packing. And in order to have maybe less of their own investment, but actually multiply the variety and the range of the offerings. And this is something that is becoming increasingly possible to do, not just in the Western world, but also here in Asia and in mainland China particularly. Some of the biggest successes that we've seen in the market are also companies who were not in the segment traditionally, but they enter maybe from online, they enter from like games online in order to then make available portfolio food and beverage product, which had been achieved via connect and develop method.
I think that's absolutely great, and great leadership and great companies will continue to innovate, especially around this area of sustainability. Sustainability is at the heart of how we think about business these days, and really appreciate your perspective.
Thank you, Chris.
I was most inspired by what Roberto said about focusing on connection and doing the best in the context of the world that we live in. Sustainability is the most pressing issue we have in front of us for the planet and business. Roberto connects Vitasoy's purpose and offering of plant-based nutrition to the world's calling by putting sustainability at the heart of business and leadership. As we've learned from this year's COP26, governments are failing us on key issues like climate change. People are increasingly looking to business and partnering with companies to take action and do the right thing. Many of the most effective leaders I've met have a passion to make a difference. Roberto is a great example of what I like to call sustainable leadership: leading with purpose and nurturing a culture of innovation to drive sustainable practice into the heart of the organization. I love Roberto's ambition to lead sustainable business practice from Asia and set an ongoing example for the rest of the world. All of us should be working to put the larger purpose of creating shared value for people, planet, and social prosperity at the center of all we do. I hope you've enjoyed the three-part series with Roberto on culture, innovation, and sustainability. Please hit subscribe and send us your feedback at apunchabove@fosterequity.com. Thanks for listening.
A Punch Above is a Foster Equity production. Hosted and narrated by Chris Foster. Executive producers Chris Foster and Bev Ho. Production, editing, and sound design by Jim Figueroa. Copyright music and use under Artlist and free use.